Chapter 16. The Word that was in the beginning. Knowledge, born of experience and purification, enables the human being to gain the use of two immortal faculties, the soul and the word. Hermes comments on this in verse 41 of the 13th book. In this sense, every living being is immortal, but most of all the human being, who is able to receive God and be one with Him. It is only with this living being that the Godhead communicates, during the night by dreams and during daytime by signs. In manifold ways it foretells the future, by birds, by entrails, the clouds and the oak, so that it is given to man to know past, present and future. God is omnipresent. He is activity and power. It is not at all difficult to understand Him. You probably find these words of Hermetic doctrine somewhat amazing. Let us try to understand them. First, let us briefly summarize what we have already discussed. The process of the monad, born of God, has three main aspects. The first is the influx of the spirit, or the divine intervention. The second is the soul, which is the radiation produced by the monadic nucleus owing to its connection with the spirit. The third is the vivification by the soul of the heart sanctuary in the fourfold personality. When this vivification has become a fact in the 130 nature-born human being who has opened himself entirely for the process of rebirth, then the human being once again has at his disposal an immortal divine power. In his nature-born form, the human being is, as yet, only an image-bearer of God, an image of the divine idea in principle. For his wandering in dialects, the consequences of his many conflicts and his interminable search for the Holy Grail have done considerable damage to his nature-born form. However, through the influx of the soul, the person has now received the power to become a child of God again, to become a perfect image of the idea once more. At that moment, the monadic process has been fundamentally restored, and the great process of transfiguration can now unfold. Everything must be done to call the original figure back into existence on the basis of the emergency order form, guided by the spirit and the soul. With the king and queen in the alchemical wedding of Christian Rosycross. However, this mighty process cannot possibly happen automatically. Those who are involved in it must cooperate in a very personal way with their utmost interest and intelligence. They will have to explore the path themselves, step by step. Once the basic possibility is present, owing to the influx of the soul, a second faculty develops. This too is immortal, and Hermes calls it the Word. With the aid of this second faculty, there develops what the Bible calls the hidden communion with God. This happens because the Spirit is then manifested in a highly distinct way in the candidate, so that at a given moment, understanding God no longer presents any difficulty. You may have thought that the hidden communion with God was a kind of mystical expression for living a life of devotion. But that would be a mistake. All higher knowledge, every deepened insight, all realizations that serve to lead the candidate out of the dialectical house of delusion come about with the aid of this second faculty. Everything that in the past was called initiation, in the positive, bona fide sense, is manifested by means of this second, immortal faculty, the living creative word. So the commencement of the truly liberating path also lies in the Word that was in the beginning. By stating this fact in its prologue, the Gospel according to John proves that it is the most important Gospel, and this statement has also made it the Gospel most loved by the Gnostic brotherhoods of all times. Its prologue makes it the Hermetic Gospel par excellence. Once the radiation of the nucleus has broken through into the heart sanctuary and fills the entire being, this radiation will also enter the head sanctuary, provided the human being is to some extent attuned to this mighty vibration and is beginning to heed the influx of the gnosis into his heart. The chakra system as a whole, and the three chakras in the head, in particular, act as an intermediary in this process. The pineal chakra forms the point of entry for the monadic kundalini, which brings about the influx of the seven spirit. The forehead chakra is located in the open space behind the frontal bone, and it is from there that the nature-born ego must be driven away and the new soul, as a ruling factor, must be put on its throne once again. The third chakra is the throat chakra, with the aid of which the higher, liberating, creative faculty is released. This faculty enables the candidate to make the second element of immortality a fully active factor in his life. If you possess a very strong ego, this can be determined from the light emanating from your forehead. Avery's singular radiance, a very special fire, then emanates from it, which is also imparted to the eyes. In the process we are discussing, the ego has to give way, it has to disappear. In fact, as the process of genesis of the new Gnostic consciousness unfolds, the ego simply glides away downwards until finally it disappears via the sacral plexus. As soon as the nature-born ego has vanished, the newly born soul takes up its position in the seat in, tended for it from the beginning. From that moment onwards, it will no longer be the nature-born ego, but the soul which is the guiding factor of consciousness in your life. The first immortal faculty, that of the soul, can be thought of as the knight of the Holy Grail's shield. The second immortal faculty, the word, can be seen as the sword of the Holy Grail. The entry of the spirit, or the bridegroom or king, as the alchemical wedding of Christian Rosicross calls it, into the pineal center can be viewed as a positive current of energy. The entry of the soul, chi, or the bride, or queen, into the center of the forehead concerns a negative pole of energy. These two currents come to a focus in the uppermost area of the throat, and they give rise to a sparkling, a radiance, an active, creative faculty that renders the candidate fully able to liberate himself from the nadir and raise himself out of the borderland of dialectics. Perhaps you have already discovered, or are in the process of discovering, that the realm of dialectics is an absolute borderland. You are not able to circumvent matter. You are not able to cross that border, for in dialectics everything turns into its opposite. You are aiming at something and you find yourself faced with its opposite. You try to achieve it in another way, and sooner or later the adversary, the counter nature, appears again, right in front of you. That is why you will never be able to make your way right through dialectics. It is a borderland. Now the new second faculty is capable of liberating you from this borderland. It is capable of raising you into the liberating life. It is the miraculous sword of the Holy Grail. Divested of its legendary wrappings, divested of its symbolism, it is made into an active factor in one's life. All those who have restored the connection between the monad and the physical personality receive this sword in order to enter the process of transfiguration. To give some indication of the activity and power of this weapon, Hermes says, "It is only with this living being who possesses this weapon as that the Godhead communicates, during the night by dreams and during daytime by signs. In manifold ways it foretells the future, by birds, by entrails, the clouds and the oak, so that it is given to man to know past, present and future." We will need to go rather deeply into these pronouncements, for without some explanation you will almost certainly misunderstand. People have not understood these words of Hermes. They sound very mediumistic, very negatively occult, and have led many an author to condemn Hermeticism as accursed heathenism, supporting their claim with all kinds of biblical warnings, like the one that cautions against heeding the cries of birds or engaging in sorcery and similar activities, but there is no reason to think that Hermes is using these words to draw attention to things like that. His words are a veiled indication intended for serious pupils and not for the profane. We would like to explain to you what Hermes meant by dreams, signs, omens, birds, entrails, and oaths. All the processes related to the transformations in the head and heart sanctuaries are very closely connected with new currents, radiations, and developments in the astral atmosphere. When you follow the path and seek connection with the monad, the pure astral atmosphere will come to you in order to form a link with you. The time will come when your entire astral body is pervaded by it. The pure astral substance and the pure ethers, as the holy foods, as will be linked with you. Now, if you think of the threefold process just explained, the process unfolding in the pineal center and the forehead center, as well as in the throat, where the positive and negative aspects of the new touch converge, giving rise to a spark, a new faculty, then you will be able to imagine that the new atmospheric substance which comes into contact with you via the new sparkling principle in the head sanctuary will also enter into contact with the nerve ether. The nerve ether, the nerve fluid, will undergo all the reflexes, all the influences of the new development. After a while, these new impulses in the nerve ether will begin to speak to certain vital organs, because it is with the aid of the nerve ether that your thinking processes and all your sensory organs work, live, burn, and function. The quality of your nerve ether also determines your mentality, the various aspects of your sensorial behavior, and so on. So when the new power is poured out over you and enters you after all the preparations we have described, it will make itself known to you via the nerve ether through its activities and stimuli. When the new impulses begin to work and speak in the nerve ether, the candidate will begin to understand them with the aid of the new creative faculty. And what Hermes means to say is that when this happens, the candidate enters into a genuine, positive, living communion with the Logos. The new astral light, the pure astral substance, and all the activities that go on within it are reflected in the nerve ether. You should think in this context of the golden head as the summit of the living body, in which many pure astral values are concentrated. In this way, the candidate who has been ennobled to this state of being, who has penetrated through to this point, will enter into a genuine, living, inner communion with the golden head. Such impulses can be assimilated and understood by the second new faculty, which controls all the organs of the head sanctuary. Now that is what Hermes Trismegistus means by dreams. They are nothing else than visionary impulses, visionary in sights, impressions that correspond, for instance, with what Peter spoke about in his Pentecostal address, when, quoting the words of the prophet, he said, "And it shall come to pass in the last days, says God, that your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams." These words refer to a new visionary intuition, a new sensory condition. So the dreams meant by Hermes are something quite different from what is generally understood by the word, and from what one experiences as an I in I centrality. They in fact concern the way in which suggestions and impulses of Gnostic wisdom, which are developed in the universal chain via the seven schools, are transmitted to all candidates who are appropriately ennobled. In this way, a living communion develops between all the children of God. This communion excludes any possibility of misunderstanding and cannot be impeded by time or distance. Through the new faculty, you enter into contact with all the others. Instructions for walking the path can only be transferred to your consciousness by means of these nerve projections. The result is an intimate communion with the unseen. That is where it begins. And this beginning is not in the least spectacular, for it is the commencement of the hidden communion with God in souls who have entered the peace of Bethlehem. Those who have entered into this intimate communion with the Logos do not speak about it. They go their way in silence and carry out their task. And that is the meaning of the great outpouring of the Holy Spirit, the miracle of Pentecost. The new language spoken by the apostles means the use of this new creative faculty, this second immortal faculty, in the blazing fire of astral renewal. Truly, it is this that Hermes was speaking about, and that was later discussed by the prophet Joel, in emulation of Hermes. Thereafter it shall come to pass that I shall pour out my spirit upon all that lives, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. If you are truly a son or daughter of the young Gnostic Brotherhood, in the full and serious sense of the word, then this will be your future, if only you are willing to walk the path. And read once again in the book of Acts how the Holy Spirit, the second function of the creative faculty, is suddenly poured out over thousands of people at once. It is a privilege to be allowed to talk to you about all these things, and we hope that you will not misuse these communications. Treasure them in your heart.